Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan on News Talk.
I just want to flag with you before I chat to my next guest that this next conversation is of a very sensitive and adult nature. So I just want to flag that if you've little ears in the background over the next couple of minutes or so. Charlene Masterson is with me in studio today. Charlene was abused by her father over a 7.5 year period. And David Masterson sent text messages under the guise of being another person to his daughter, demanding that she engage in sexual acts with men. He was jailed in 2021 for 17 years for sexually abusing his daughter. And Charlene is with us here in studio today. Charlene, thank you very much for coming in and for joining us on the programme. Can I just ask you to bring us back, first of all, Charlene, to the very early days of your childhood, you know, your earliest childhood memories. And tell me, what was life like growing up?
I was a very active kid. I was a very good kid. I would never have gotten into trouble or anything in school or any of that. I was very, very, very well behaved. I danced, I did swimming, first aid, you name it, I did it.
Yeah.
I don't know how my mother kept up with me, to be honest, dropping me to places. I was an only child.
Yeah.
I was the only grandchild on one side for 13 years.
You had the run of the place.
I'm sure I was having a great time. But it was a normal childhood. Anyone that would have looked in would have said, normal family.
Yeah. And your relationship with your parents in those kind of early primary school years?
Yeah, it always would have been good. I would have obviously been closer to Mam because we spent more time together. Like, Mam would have taken me out on weekends or when she wasn't working or dropped me to activities, all that sort of stuff. So I didn't really spend time with Dad. I think I remember maybe 3 times in my life where we had outings together, but nothing over the top or nothing regular.
Was he working a lot?
Yeah. He worked. He was a barman at one point and he did hackney driving and he worked for an airline. Like, it's
probably a lot of evening kind of work then.
Yeah,
by the sounds.
Kind of shift work and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. So childhood was good.
Yeah.
Yeah. When did that change, Charlene?
About a month after my 18th birthday. Literally about 4 weeks later.
Yeah.
In the March of, 2007.
What happened 4 weeks later?
I got a text from a number I didn't know. And it was kind of an accusing, I know what you did. And as I said, wasn't someone that got in trouble. So instant panic because this wasn't the norm for me. I didn't do anything wrong. And, you know, in normal circumstances, you'd kind of take a minute and say, hold on, I didn't do anything. And you'd kind of ignore it or whatever. But I didn't. And it was, I know where you live. I know where your dad works. I know who his boss is. All this sort of stuff, and you need to do stuff now to stop me destroying your dad's job or that sort of stuff.
And that must have been terrifying as an 18-year-old to get this text.
And a very naive 18-year-old. Like, I wasn't street smart at all. So this was quite terrifying. So I turned to the one person I thought would help, which was my dad, and he never questioned, what did you do? Did you do anything? Nothing like that. It was an instant, well, you're just going to have to do it.
Did this specify in this text message what it was that you were to do?
I think after a while they did. And it was sexual acts with men or strangers or whoever. And they needed to come to the house and all this sort of stuff.
It's
like a movie.
It's absolutely shocking,
yeah.
Charlene.
Yeah.
And when you got that text, the only person you mentioned this to was your dad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because he was, I thought, my protector or my safe space, essentially. And that wasn't the case.
So was there just, there was one message initially
this went on for weeks and weeks, I think, before anything actually happened, physically happened. But this was constant. This was when I was in school, dance class, you name it. And it was very like, they knew exactly where I was. Like, oh, I know you're going to your grandmother's, or I know you're off to dance class, or, you know, it was a lot of information. So it was quite terrifying.
Did you feel I suppose hindsight's a great thing. Like you were probably thinking, like anybody would, this person is following me. They know my every movement.
That's what I thought.
Yeah.
Because it was very much, I know you've just gotten off the bus and you're on your way to your grandma. Like it was pretty terrifying. Without all the details of it, even just that element of it was scary.
You went to your dad to ask for help and, you know, and what should you do? And the man that should have protected you and advised you told you to go along with this.
Yeah. Because it was to save his job. And that was it. There was no other rhyme or reason for it. He didn't, I don't know, protect me in any way. He made out like he was, you know, I'll be there and I'll make sure nothing happens, et cetera, et cetera. But obviously it was him all along, so.
I don't want to pry too much, Charlene, and I know this is very difficult for you to talk about. So in as much as you feel comfortable mm-hmm. telling us, the first time this happened, what can you tell us about that? Or
it was like my dad kind of, like, I was to be dressed in certain clothing and all this sort of stuff. And I remember sitting and waiting for this stranger to arrive or whatever it was. And, you know, my dad looking out the window going, oh, well, here he comes. Like, again, hindsight is fantastic. And how would you know that that's that's the person? I obviously had to be blindfolded and all that sort of stuff. And when it was over, so there was sexual acts or whatever. And when it was over, the person left. I use that term very loosely. And then my dad would come in and say, God, are you okay? And et cetera, et cetera. This is a man that would have physically seen the state I was in during, because he was the perpetrator. But I didn't know that.
That wasn't the only occasion that happened?
No. That went on for about 2.5 years. And I just, every time it happened, you thought, this is the last time, you know. And I think that was what got me through at the time, because I was like, oh, if I just do this, that's it. It's over. It's done. I don't have to do this anymore. And it just never ended.
Never ended for 2.5 years.
Yeah.
You obviously had no idea whatsoever that this was your father mm-hmm. carrying out the abuse when it was happening over that 2.5 year period. When did you find that out and how did you find it out?
I was in the house I'm going to say it was like a Saturday morning or something. I was in the house on my own. I was on holidays, I think, from college. My dad was in work and he had said that he'd brought my grandmother's laptop home to put new software on. And I was just hanging around the house and I was like, oh, sure, I'll do it. I knew where the discs were and stuff. So took out the discs. And when I took out the holder of the discs, there was 2 discs at the front that had like squiggly marker lines on them. So I was like, what's that? And I put it into the laptop and it was a recording of the first encounter. But I never got onto the second disc. So I don't know what that was. But the first one, I watched about 10 seconds of it and I realised that it was my dad. That was how I found out.
That's how you found out.
Yeah.
You saw footage that had been recorded.
Yeah. Now I knew, and just a flag, I did know it was being recorded, but it was like a term of the thing to make sure I did it for the blackmailer. But obviously it was him, so he had it.
Shane, what went through your head at that moment?
I genuinely don't know. I just remember ejecting the discs, putting it away, closing the laptop, end of story. And then the text messages kind of continued. My dad got home. He went up for a lie down because he'd been in work early. And I remember getting messages. And I just said, I know you're my dad. Like, and within 3 seconds, he shouted from upstairs. And when I went up, he kind of turned it very much a gaslighting thing of, how could you think I could do that? How dare you even say that? Etc. etc. And nearly convinced me that I hadn't seen it. I knew I had seen it, but he genuinely convinced me.
That's a picture you're never going to forget.
No, ever, ever. But it's all part of the manipulation or the psychological kind of abuse.
What did you do at that stage?
I think I just gave up. And I don't know, after that, it obviously just transpired into open abuse in the home. but I couldn't tell you when it transitioned into, but I never got another text message.
That ended the
so once. He wasn't that clever.
Yeah, once you, I suppose, once he knew, or you had said that you knew it was him, it came to an end. It ceased. Yeah. The messages or the blackmail element of it.
Yeah.
Did anybody else ever know, Charlene?
No.
And you never spoke to anybody?
No. And I know people always ask, like, why didn't my mom do anything? Mom thought it was just, so my dad's kind of his main psychological abuse was through text message. So it was a constant on my case. I literally had to have my phone plastered to my hand 24/7. And that's how he used to argue with me most of the time, was through text message. And mom just thought he was just on my case all the time. Because I was all of a sudden going out with friends, and I was a young adult.
You were 18,
I was,
yeah.
You know, I was 18, 19, 20. You know, I was out in college and I had a part-time job, and he, mom just thought that that's what it was. So if she saw me down or, you know, out of sorts, that's what I told her it was. I never, ever told her. And if I could have gone to the grave without telling her any of this, I would have. And when she heard that it was text messages or he was on my case, she would confront him about it. And she did that 4 times.
But she never knew the extent.
She never knew.
Yeah.
But I remember the last time I said anything to her, I woke up about 2-3 in the morning and his face was nose to nose with mine. And he just said, "You didn't think that was going to stop me." And I just gave up after that. I said, "There's no point." And that was about two, three years before the end. So I'd just given up. I what's the point? It was only making my situation worse. I don't know how it could have gone any worse, but it was just making my situation worse. So I just stopped.
Stopped as in stopped?
Stopped showing that I was in some sort of distress. Like I really had to put on a mask.
It continued.
7 years.
For 7 more years.
Yeah. Well, 5 more.
5 more, sorry,
five more,
at that point.
Yeah.
What was the turning point, Charlene? At what point did you decide, I'm talking to the guards about this, I'm raising the flag,
I actually didn't. I had no intention of going to the guards. The abuse had reached a point where he didn't care who was around or any of that sort of stuff. It was actually the weekend that I spoke out. Now, my friend had asked me about it months prior. She had just twigged there was something not right. I had started to pull back from everything. I wasn't myself. And she asked me out straight, "Is your dad abusing you?" And I said, "No." And she said, "You're not defending it like someone who's been wrongly accused." She said, "If someone said that to me about my dad, I would lose the head." She said, "You're just so cool." She's like, "I know there's something." And that was in the March. And in the June, he had just reached a point. Now, he knew that friend was onto him, I think, and he took a disliking to her. So he didn't like me being with her. And she was part of my hobby. So my hobby was then gone. And he had reached a point where he didn't care. And I remember another friend of mine was asleep in my bedroom. She was staying over. And my bedroom is just above the sitting room. And he had me up against the wall by my throat. And he had reached, I was like, "He's going to kill me. It's now come to this point." And it was the next day. I sat in my friend's garden for about 6 hours. And we just talked absolute drivel. I think I must have been talking 20 miles an hour, just purely because I had a feeling the topic was going to come up. And I'm about 11:30 and I says, "Right, I'm going to go home now." And she said, "No, you're not." And she said, "I'm going to ask it straight again." And I just said, "Yes." And that transpired everything. But it was another 2 years before the guards came knocking. He had gotten himself into other trouble, which brought them to my door. And that's how it.
So it was your, I suppose, your friend pursuing it and asking the questions.
Yeah.
That's ultimately what got the ball rolling, I suppose.
Yeah. Been a long journey.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Going through the whole process of this with the guards and with the courts, how was that experience for you?
The guards were incredible, I have to say. And you don't hear that said a lot. And I know I've had people kind of, almost give out to me that I say that, because maybe their experience wasn't as good.
The same, yeah.
But the detectives I worked with were incredible. They put me in touch with the DRCC and they just literally held my hand through the entire thing. But it's a tough journey. I can't sugarcoat it. It is really tough. And I found the first day in court the hardest, because it was the first time, so giving my statements was the first time I'd said a lot of the details out loud. Even to my friend, I didn't give her half of the information. And then I heard it out loud in court for the first time. So that was really surreal. And I think I had an out-of-body experience that day. It just didn't feel like it was my story. I was also facing him for the first time. Victim impact statement on that day. It was just everything happened on that one day.
At this point, he'd obviously been arrested. And
he'd been arrested and pleaded guilty to all counts. I think there was 33 counts or something. And he had pleaded guilty to everything.
The fact that he pled guilty when you heard that, was there a sense of, not sense of relief, but I suppose a sense of maybe belief for you? Like, how did you feel when you heard that he pled guilty?
I don't know if that's the right word to use. Vindication, maybe. I know I had people say, oh, you know, he's still your dad. And it's just such a toxic thing. Yeah. People have said that. And I'm like, okay. But to me, I haven't had a dad since a month after my 18th birthday. Because if your dad can do that, he doesn't deserve that title. And it just, people's opinions get very vocal after something like this. And it nearly makes you feel like you don't have the right to feel how you feel. I don't hate him. I don't have any feelings. There's no feelings there. I think hatred just uses up too much energy, to be honest, and he's taken enough. So I just don't give it that. But people's opinions get very vocal.
He was jailed. You went obviously through the court's process.
Yeah.
He was jailed for 17 years back in 2021. This would have been really kind of during the COVID period, wasn't
yeah.
it? Yeah.
Yeah.
How did you feel when you heard the sentencing?
At the time, really good. And then you kind of go, you take into consideration, you know, he's going to serve 10 years. He'll be out in 2031. But you kind of go, oh yeah, that was, you know, and it was a monumental sentence at the time. And then you see all the time in the media of, you know, isolated incidents of rape or sexual assault or whatever. And, you know, the perpetrators get 4 years. And I always have this conversation with my mom, and I'm like, God, 4 years seems such a small, it's such a small sentence. Mm-hmm. And then my mom always says, but if you were to get 4 years for every time it happened to you, 17 years is nothing. And I think it's just something to bear in mind. I don't think any time is...
It'll never bring back.
No, yeah. I'll never get those years back. But no time I don't think is ever substantial. He could have got 100 years and it still wouldn't feel like enough just for everything he did.
Do you mind me asking, have you ever heard from him or seen him since he was sentenced?
And I did have I worked with one of the ladies in the DRCC kind of in the run up to court.
Yeah.
And my she said to me, this was the Friday, I think we're in court on Monday. And she said, is there anything that's going to throw you or, you know, maybe tip you over the edge a little bit on Monday? And I was like, I think just seeing him for the first time, because in my head, he had been in prison for a couple of years at this point for other stuff. And I kind of thought maybe he might be this frail man and I might feel a bit of guilt or, I don't know, sympathy for him or something. So I kind of thought that might throw me, you know. And when she was like, that's fine, there's a little window in the courtroom door, we can look at him before he sees you. And I was like, Grant, okay. And when I went, he was exactly the same. It hadn't had any impact on him whatsoever. And that threw me more than anything, because it just felt like he wasn't sorry. It didn't have any emotional or physical impact on him whatsoever. And that was upsetting, I think. I think I just expected it to have, I don't know.
Over time.
Yeah, I just thought maybe, because I know it physically impacted me. So I just thought maybe, but obviously not.
the sentence obviously was handed down in 2021. I know you've been kind of talking about this, you know, again in recent weeks, Charlene. I suppose, why did you decide to speak out about it? Just to encourage others maybe listening to you?
Yeah, that was part of it. Another part was I just couldn't carry it anymore.
Yeah.
And it just, and I also didn't want anyone, like you see people talking about this all the time, and I didn't want anyone saying it to my mom and being like, Jesus, did you see, there's the mother not saying anything, and not knowing that my mom is the mother in that situation. And I just couldn't carry it anymore. But also, if my story can help even one person, I've done my job, and that's all I wanted. But it's helped me in turn.
Has it?
Yeah, absolutely.
You feel there's been a sense of closure. Is that too much?
I don't think there'll ever be like a fully closed door. Maybe it's still ajar a little bit, but I just think it's therapy doesn't work for me. I've tried. It just doesn't. And it's not for everybody, but doing like advocacy work for the DRCC or talking to other survivors, that's kind of really helpful.
Well, I think the work you've done in speaking out about this, Charlene, is just, it's incredible. Like I honestly think you're incredible for just being so open and so calm and even having the ability to tell your story. Because I think for anybody listening to you today, it is so difficult to put, you know, yourself in your shoes and then to see how strong you are, you know, in being able to talk out about it. So I hope you realise and understand that, you know, you have done a great service for people who were in a similar situation or maybe have experienced something like this to know they can come forward and be believed.
Yeah. I think that's important.
Yeah. I wish you all the best for the future.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. You're keeping well aside from...
Not a bother.
Yeah, good.
Dancing away.
Life's good, are you? Yeah. Dancing's a big love, is it?
Huge.
What type?
Amateur musicals.
Oh, lovely. Right.
So I'm on stage next week. So
where are you on stage?
Wall falling at the moment. I'm in the Civic Theatre next week with Big Fish, the musical.
Fantastic.
So it's great.
Well, look, the best of luck. And,
thank you so much.
And thanks a million for coming in and joining us here today.
Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan. Weekdays at midday on News Talk.